Paper six, going concern.
Paper number six is a paper we're bringing to you following the discussions at the January Interpretations Committee meeting. At that meeting, we provided you with feedback on the ISB's decision not to proceed with some proposed amendments relating to disclosures about going concern. And we explained the reasons that the board had in reaching that conclusion following an 8-8 vote between the board members. Now, at the January Interpretations Committee meeting, several Interpretation Committee members expressed disappointment about the board's decision there, particularly given the importance about this disclosure. And in that meeting, some Interpretation Committee members noted the relevance of some of the existing disclosure requirements about significant judgments that are made in applying accounting policies and how those could be relevant to the judgments made in assessing whether disclosures are needed about going concern. Since the January meeting, we've reflected on that and thought we would bring this paper to you at this meeting to propose that we should close out the committee's discussions on this issue with an agenda decision, picking up some of those points that were raised at the last committee meeting concerning the disclosures about significant judgments. We've proposed in Appendix A of this agenda paper an agenda decision, and in that we've made reference to paragraph 122 of IS1, which is the one which requires disclosures about significant judgments made in applying accounting policies. So the questions that we wanted to ask you is, first of all, do you agree with the recommendation to close this topic by issuing an agenda decision? And secondly, if so, do you agree with the proposed wording set out in Appendix A?
Comments? Reinhardt?
I wanted to commend the staff for bringing this issue forward and trying to bring closure to it. I do agree and believe that the tentative agenda decision is useful as by virtue of the fact that it does point to some existing guidance that can be used as a hook or lever to the significant judgment that management makes around disclosure of those close calls on ongoing concern. And as I mentioned at the last committee meeting, what I was concerned about was when I look at the direction of where the IAASB is going in terms of auditor reporting, and likely will require the auditor to discuss in the auditor's report significant judgment areas. It wouldn't be, in my mind, good for the auditor to report on something that's not in the financial statements. And so to have something like this to provide the hook as to disclosure in the financial statements is very helpful. I think overall, I think it would be nonetheless ideal if the ISB would issue some guidance from a standards perspective, but recognizing we are where we are, I think this is a good interim solution. My one suggestion is the draft wording of the draft agenda decision makes reference to gross and net. And I think that although we as committee members may understand what is meant by that, that may be confusing in practice because the way the auditing literature works from the perspective of going concern is you look at events or circumstances that may give rise to material uncertainties. And then you consider mitigating actions by management. Those mitigating actions by management may not necessarily be totally within their control. There may be assumptions, you may be looking to past history or other facts, but it's not necessarily that those actions themselves may create uncertainties as well. And so rather than using the words gross versus net, just focus on the fact that this is a significant judgment that is made. When you look at the entire mix of the events, circumstances, management's actions in response to those events and circumstances, at the end of the day, there's no disclosure under paragraph 5 of IS1, but significant judgment was involved. Net, looking at that entire package of information to come to that conclusion. So that's, those are my comments.
Tony?
Yeah, I agree with Reinhardt. I think this is extremely helpful. I think it provides some clarity around the fact that there is some existing guidance that requires disclosures when management has made a significant judgment. I think I would echo the concern about GrossNet. I'm just not sure that's the way people would automatically think about it. And I just wonder if it might be a little bit confusing. And the other thought I had was the last sentence of the second paragraph where it says the ISB decided not to propose an amendment. It lists a range of concerns about disclosures. And I just wonder if some people might look at that and say, well, okay, you guys say you should be making some disclosures, but the ISB said you shouldn't. Are you being contradictory? And I wondered if it might be helpful sort of not to say that, to just,
yeah.
To just be clear that paragraph 125 requires disclosures and leave it at that.
Point taken. Laurence?
I also agree that it is better than nothing. But I do not recognize myself in some of the paragraphs. For example, it says that the Interpretation Committee noted that in light of the IASB's discussion on this issue was too broad to be addressed through a narrow scope amendment to IFRS. Well, we did propose a narrow scope amendment, and we thought at the time this was appropriate to do. And the last sentence of the proposed agenda decision, the Interpretation Committee noted that the requirements in IS1 relating to this disclosure are sufficient, whereas we said in the past, no, it's not sufficient. So what are the reasons for not adding it to our agenda? The reason is that the ISB doesn't want to make an amendment. It's not our will. We do whatever we can with the means we have. And the only means that's left to us is an agenda decision. So I would not put on the IFRIC, on the Interpretations Committee, the reasons why no further work is being done. I mean, the one who's responsible is the ISB.
Andrew?
I support the staff proposal here, subject to the drafting improvements that others have suggested. We are dealing with the art of the possible, but I think this is helpful.
Okay, Balon? We lost Balon. John?
I agree with what Laurent said. I don't recognize in this agenda decision that the decisions that were previously made by the Interpretations Committee at all, so I wouldn't agree with some of the comments that are in there. I also have some concerns. I'm not quite sure that paragraph 122 of IAS1 is any clearer than paragraph 25 of IAS1 as to what disclosures are required, if there's a close call. I don't think it's clear what the trigger for disclosures under paragraph 122 is. Is it the magnitude of the gross uncertainties, or is it just determined as a judgment as to whether you make the disclosure? There doesn't seem to be any framework or basis to make the judgments any more on paragraph 122 than there is under paragraph 25. It's also not clear to me that the disclosures that are required under paragraph 122 actually apply to judgments in relation to the disclosures, because it refers to amounts recognized in the financial statements. So I don't think it's that clear that paragraph 122 even applies to close calls, ongoing concern, material uncertainty disclosures. And I don't think that this is good. While this is better than nothing, I don't think it's likely to provide the necessary clarity on the disclosures that are required under IAS1 or reduce the diversity in practice, which is the issue that first came to the IFRIC on this issue. So I don't think this is a great step forward, better than doing nothing. But I think it's a position that the Interpretations Committee has been forced into as a second best and a long way short of what I think would have been a better solution, which is the amendments to IAS 1.
Okay. Sandy?
I had a similar, well, I agree with the last sentence in particular of the tentative agenda decision, which Laurence pointed out. But I had a similar reaction as to what John was talking about, in the sense of when you go back and look at 122, it seems as though it's talking about things recorded in the financial statements. And I looked at it from the perspective of, is liquidity recorded in the financial statements? And would one really apply that paragraph to an assessment of the overall liquidity of the organization? Because I may have all the assets and liabilities measured right, but, you know, next period I may run out of cash. And so I'm not certain that it really helped me that much. So while I could sort of see it in uncertainties, I think that's a really broad interpretation. If that was working, we wouldn't have come here in the first place. So I guess I'm more in line with John's thinking, and the last sentence in particular.
Martin, and then I'm going to wrap it up.
Yeah, my question is whether history is of such an importance. I mean, I read through the tentative agenda decision, and I really asked myself whether we need the second and the third paragraph, because this is all about what happened in the meantime, but this is not really the basis for the decision. So one probably could consider whether it's necessary to have these two paragraphs in, or whether it would be suitable to take them out.
Okay. We brought this paper in an attempt to, as the cycle babble goes, provide closure. So the first question is, do you want it? Or would it be better to say nothing? That's your choice. Now, we can talk about the wording. As Laurent says, she doesn't recognize herself in some of the passages, and I think that's a fair comment. But I think the first question is, given the choice between something like this and nothing, which do you prefer? Okay. I don't see anybody saying nothing. So now the next question is history, as Martin said. Do we need all the history? Which I think Martin's proposal was that we delete roughly half of the agenda decision. But no,
the reason for this suggestion was because, I mean, if we go to other agenda decisions, I don't think that we have so much history in the decision. So
then
that would leave us just with saying it's too broad and stopping and not making what I thought people considered helpful, which was the references to other things in IAS 1.
It's helpful to include references to IAS 1. We might also include a reference to liquidity disclosures in IFRS 7 if we wanted to emphasize there's a need to say something. Mm-hmm. My point about some of the history was not including the reasons why the IASB didn't do anything, because then you might find somebody saying, well, in paragraph 2, you tell me the ISB said it's not necessary, and in paragraph 4 you're telling me I've got to do it. So I was concerned about the history introducing ambiguity or introducing a gross and net assessment, which people might not recognize as the way you look at going concern. So I think so long as we keep the references to the literature that might be relevant to saying you should be saying something about this, then the history about what the ISB said,
okay. Laurence?
But that brings the question about what is the reason for rejecting doing something for us. I'd like to know what is the reason we will advocate for saying we're not adding it.
Because we were told not to.
Okay. Can we write so?
We can put together some words to reflect. Yeah, and that was the reason for the history. The history was to sort of build, set the scene as to where we've got to and how we got there. But I accept that some may see, you know, in isolation, it could be confusing.
So we've got some wording suggestions. We will get them to you with update.
But I did not see any dissent over something like this. It was just, okay. Closure achieved after a fashion. Levies. Canadian.